Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 53. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the show where we gather four people together, two of which are me and Scott, two of which are guests every week, to try to talk a little bit about what we think might be happening in the future of our world. And we're very happy to have a couple of great guests today joining us from the 20 Questions podcast, Nick McKinney. Welcome to Forecast.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for letting me sit in your questionnaire chair.
Yes.
And this will be fun.
The question tables have been turned. Also joining us, very excited to have Phil Plait, the bad astronomer and host of a new show on the Discovery Network.
Well, a pilot. We'll see if it turns into a real show or not.
I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. It's going to happen.
Can you see into the future?
I predict. Yes. Usually I don't make the predictions. That's why we make guests on here. But yes, damn it. I want it to happen, so I hope it does. And Phil, we're very glad to have you. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
I've got an email here from someone who would like us to call him the good doctor.
The good doctor, eh?
Yeah. Uh-oh. I think his name's like Frank or something. It's better than the bad doctor. He says, "Hi, Tom, Scott, and guests. I have a short-term prediction about wireless power. I feel like giant Tesla coils for neighborhoods or city is very far away, but how about for the home? People are already accustomed to getting internet wired to their house, then the signal going through a wireless router. Why not the same model for wireless energy with a home-sized Tesla coil? The same way I take my laptop from room to room and stay online, I could move and stay plugged in. Combining the commonplace idea of home wireless networks with something as futuristic as a ubiquitous Tesla coil could be very close."
This doesn't seem that far off. And in fact, aren't there technologies like this in the works? And haven't we talked about this on... I'm having Forecast deja vu big time about this prediction.
We've definitely talked about wireless power before. And there is a form of wireless charging. Right. And there's some wireless power being experimented with, for sure.
Yeah. All I know is I went on a mini vacation a little while ago. Well, a couple of years ago now. And it was the first time I'd ever gotten my hands on internet through the wall, but it was done through a power outlet. So you had kind of a modem that went right into a power outlet. No other cables, no patch cables, anything like that. And that modem then patched into my notebook. And I had really fast internet in this very remote cabin. And I remember being sort of blown away by it, thinking this is the future. And it doesn't seem like I've seen much more about that since. And I know it's kind of the inverse of this, but the idea of power and internet being sort of interchangeable, in other words, information and the power to get it to us all kind of being in the same atomic stratosphere, makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. The one thing that I see out of the situation is Tesla coils put off a lot of magnetic energy, so we're going to have to also look to see if it's going to cause any harm to us. I know that they say, you know, putting a phone to your ear is not going to cause any problems, but I mean, this is a whole different thing, and it's a whole lot more wattage. So we're going to have to look at that as a health aspect of we're going to be walking around all this wireless energy. The only other thing I could think of is you go into Star Trek or Star Wars when you have those big beams of energy that you get in front of, it'll fry you. So, I mean, how do you do the difference, and how do you keep them separated where you're not going to get hurt in a health aspect? So,
Phil, what do you think of small home Tesla coils?
Well, how much time do we have? As far as I know, Tesla coils take energy. They don't actually beam energy. You're pumping energy into them, and then they just, you know, they spark out. And I don't know if that's really a great way of moving energy around.
Not very efficient, is it?
No, and it's the wrong kind of energy. You can generate electricity that way, but it's a huge power loss. The way these small appliances can be recharged, I have an electric toothbrush that you stick on a pedestal and it just recharges itself. That's by a magnetic induction. And so you don't actually have to plug anything in. Well, you have to have a base that plugs in, but the rechargeable battery sits inside of the toothbrush itself and never has to connect to anything. But that's very close range. That only works close range. You have to generate pretty big magnetic fields, as Nick said. And so you don't want to have these giant magnetic fields to power a house all around, because that would be dangerous. There are ways of beaming energy. You can have, for example, satellites in space that absorb sunlight. They would use solar panels, for example, and then they would beam the energy down to Earth using microwaves. You'd have microwave receivers, and that could send electricity out. That's more or less like what we have today. You generate energy one place, and you beam it through, well, you send it through wires as a current to your location. I guess you could have little mini microwave dishes on top of your house that could receive power from satellites. But again, that's kind of dangerous. You have to have precision beaming. You can't have spillover. There are a lot of issues with this.
It's point to point, right? The satellite has to deliver it to that one dish. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm guessing that, it's easy to write about this if you're in a Heinlein novel. He wrote about that.
Yeah.
But when it actually comes down to, cutting metal, it's a lot harder than you might think.
You think your DirecTV reception is bad during a rainstorm. Wait till your microwave dish gets out of line.
Well, it won't rain if you have microwaves pouring down in your house all the time, because we'll burn the atmosphere off. I saw that in The Core, I think it was.
Right, exactly.
A scientific documentary I saw a couple of years ago in the theater.
Well, folks, thanks to the good doctor for sending us his prediction. If you'd like to put your prediction up against us, or send it to us via email, rather, forecastpodcast@gmail.com is the email address, or you can post it on the blog, forecastpodcast.com. Let's get into the short-term predictions, and we will start with you, Phil. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later, maybe in the next few years. What do you got for us?
Nothing?
All right. Moving on.
We're going to run out of money. Yeah. Well, my particular field is astronomy, and it's actually really hard to predict what's going to happen because the technology gets better. But in fact, just the other day, a paper came out where the astronomers had figured out a way of using the light from a star coming down into a telescope to interfere with the light from that star, sort of a self-canceling wave. And the star light drops a lot. And if there's a planet orbiting that star nearby, it kind of pops right out. You can see it. And they can do this. This has been tested now. They can do this a lot better than they've ever been able to do before. And it makes me think that in 5 years, technology like this, and we're talking 5 years now, right?
Yeah. There's not a definite number on this, but 5 years is the right scope, definitely.
Okay. So 1995 was the first planet found orbiting another star like the sun. It wasn't an Earth-like planet, but it was another planet found orbiting a sun-like star. In the 15 years since, we've discovered almost 500. I suspect that in 5 years, in less the amount of time that it's already passed since we discovered the first planet, this technique plus other ones will probably triple or more the number of planets we will detect orbiting other stars. And I think between now and then, we will find a planet with roughly the mass of the Earth orbiting a star at the right distance to have liquid water on its surface. Doesn't mean it will have liquid water. It just means that we'll find the right size planet in the right place. At that point, we'll have to really study it hard to see what's going on. But I think that could be 5 years away.
I read something today about finding a gas giant in that magic habitable zone that they think could have moons. And then everybody starts speculating like it's an Avatar-like Pandora-type situation. Can we get habitable moons like that?
I wish I could predict that in 5 years, everybody will have forgotten about that movie, because I get that all the time. Is this Pandora? Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. But yeah. I'm the last person on the planet, I think, who hasn't seen Avatar. We've actually found planets orbiting at that distance from their stars before, but they're typically these giant planets. We don't know if they have moons, and finding out if they have moons is just beyond our technology right now. I don't know how soon we'll have telescopes that can do that. There are tricks you can do, but what we do know is that every planet in our solar system that's big has moons. The only exception is really Venus, which is the same size as Earth, but has no moon.
Mars, just barely.
Yeah, and Mars has dinky planets, or dinky moons, but it's smaller than Earth. But when you're talking about Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and Earth, there are moons. So maybe these gas giants will have moons. The problem is gas giants also have very strong magnetic fields, which causes all kinds of problems.
Especially with your home Tesla coils.
Wireless energy. Yeah, there you go. So, I don't know.
I like this idea of habitable moons, but I have a feeling when we first discover them, we'll realize that those aren't moons.
Right.
They're a space station. Yeah, exactly.
I get the joke.
At least one of us did.
More of a Star Trek guy than Star Wars, but I'll accept your joke.
Thank you. Thank you. You're very gracious, sir. Scott, what do you think? A triple number of planets? You get excited about that?
I was cut off.
Oh, we lost you. Oh, that's why you were talking.
You literally lost me, and I was hoping that question would be something I could improv off of, but unfortunately, it doesn't sound like I got much of it.
Triple the number of planets we detect over the next 5 years. It's not bad, right?
Oh, that's a great prediction. In fact, you're not a bad astronomer at all. That name is misleading. I assume it was Phil that made that prediction.
Yes, it was.
I love that idea, and I think it's probably true as we get better at detecting these planets. And this is definitely not an area of expertise for me, but every time we come up with a better telescope, a better way to get Hubble seeing further or whatever, it seems the more likely we are to find more and more planets and ultimately find one that maybe supports life in the way that ours does. It's certainly out there somewhere. Maybe that's our chance to do that. But I don't think it's far off at all. Assuming the space program continues to get some money, that in the next 5 years to 6 years, maybe we'll see something like that. That's a great prediction.
I have to admit, though, it's a bit of a cheat because NASA has the Kepler Observatory up right now, which is looking for planets, and they won't announce these results for a few more months. And if they're looking for Earth-like, they are looking for Earth-like planets. If they find any signals, that'll take a couple of years before they find them. So Kepler by itself may find hundreds of planets. That's not even including ground-based telescopes looking as well. So kind of cheated a little bit, but we'll see how the numbers pan out in the next 5 years.
Well, it's the doctoral method of science fiction, although in this case it's not science fiction, but take stuff that's already existing that not many people know about and then use it to make it sound like you're writing about the future.
Yes, that's my method exactly.
All right, Nick, let's move on to you. Short-term prediction, next few years, what do you see in your crystal ball?
Well, I'm going to talk about something that's a little near and dear to my heart here in Texas. I saw an article the other day talking about how the environment is taking a big hit from fireplaces and charcoal grills and smokers. And I see that in the next 10 years, 5-10 years, they're going to try to go to the fact of either limiting down the number of times we can barbecue, or the simple fact that we can't barbecue and run a fireplace. And it's just very odd to see the numbers that came out from a study in Rice in 2003 and then 2009 again, both saying that what happens is the acid that burns off of the burgers with the charcoal that's sawdust and a bunch of other things actually is helping pollute Houston in a much more manner than they ever thought it actually would. And that's just something I'm not really happy with. I'm going to bury my charcoal grill and, in oil and be there next to my guns and I'll be happy. I'm not going to worry about it.
I was going to say, we don't need any more excuses for Texas to try to secede from the Union. But
I was going to make that exact joke. Is this going to be before or after Texas secedes? But if they try to make a law against barbecue in Texas, it's going to happen then.
Either we succeed or I'm going to Mexico and then point my oscillating fan toward Texas. And
is your prediction here that no more barbecue in Texas? Am I hearing this right?
No. In the United States in general, I think that they're going to try to they're on this big huge clean air push, and I can agree with it in a lot of aspects. But now they're going to start turning to the little things that they can really control. And they'll put a tax on charcoal bricks or, whatever they want to put a tax on. And then I can see that really kind of starting to happen. So,
do you need any of the proof to be super compelling before, like, what would it take for you as a Texan born and bred into barbecue, like no other state in this union, what would it take for you to see whatever science is provided? And I'm not even saying that they ever will, but if they did, how much of that is enough for you to go, oh, yeah, these burgers are taking Houston down? What do you do?
Well, it's one of those things of you've got to change your lifestyle. And it's not just me. And not just Texas, but everybody in general. I mean, there's several states around us as well that barbecue in long term. It's a life changer. So either you accept the life change or you go around it illegally or – you take a hit and go to another place, another country, I guess.
Well, this is really going to drive the spray-on barbecue flavor industry.
New technologies arise during difficult times.
It's right.
the smoky flavor in the microwave, yeah, that'll be perfect. I'm all for that.
Well, I got to wonder, you know, when I think about this sort of thing, wouldn't lawnmowers be a bigger deal? Because they're very inefficient. They churn out a lot of pollution, basically. And I wonder if more people mow their lawns than barbecue. You know, I'd like to see numbers.
I don't know.
By
barbecue is a household. You know, that's a it's a household thing here in Texas. So, but we do have yards. We do mow our yards. But, you know, the one thing I do have to say about the lawnmower though is we have ozone action days here around in our area, and what they tell you is don't mow your lawn after a certain time frame, or don't mow it for that day, and that's kind of how they help control or help the environment out in that particular aspect. So. That may be
maybe
something
they do the same thing with barbecue.
You know, and that's a very good possibility. You know, saying odd house numbers can barbecue on Wednesdays, and evens can barbecue on Thursdays. So
whatever happens, sounds like George Foreman's set to make a killing.
Yes, he is.
All right, Nick, we'll stick with you as we move on to our long-term predictions. These are the longer view, more the in 100 years we'll all be in flying cheese-made cars or something like that. Don't use that prediction. But what do you got when you look long-term, farther off into the future?
Well, I've been really mulling this over for a couple of days now, trying to figure out exactly how I want to do this. I really think that it's going to be a fact of we see in movies every day of, you know, long-term, like if you want to go into a Star Wars, Star Trek, where there is an alliance-type society, where we are all bound together by human nature or by whatever it is, I really see that us all being a society that is going to be alliance-based. As far as, you know, having a rebel society, I don't know if you really would consider that. I do think that freelance work will be really high, in high demand, because alliance people will want to pay cheaper labor, and that's, you know, freelance workers. And no matter what we do, if it's in, you know, where we are traveling the stars or whether we're here on the planet, I think that we're going to have a one type society, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with that. I really don't have any, you know, specific details of that alliance society other than it will be evil, and you know, it's an empire. So
wait, the alliance is the good guys though, usually.
Well, an alliance, really, if you want to look at it in a scientific perspective, alliance is just an agreement between an entire society as a majority. So it could be evil or it could be bad or good. I'm sorry. So in either direction.
But you're thinking this one will be evil then?
Well, I mean, it's a possibility depending on corporations and how that plays out in the next, you know, 100, 200 years. And, you know, what direction they all go. Are they going to be just money driven, or are they going to be humanity driven? And that's going to definitely tell us what direction our society in general is going to go. So if they're money driven, then yeah, it's going to be more of a we don't care about the human aspect of the alliance versus if it were, you know, more of bettering the society in general, then it would be more of a good society, if that makes any sense, or good alliance. So,
Phil, what do you think? Is our society going to lose its rebellious nature?
I think we already have. When you were talking about that, I was thinking about Alliance. I was thinking about Firefly, actually, Joss Whedon's series that lasted for, 12 or 13 episodes a couple of years ago. A few years ago now. And how it was, there was an alliance, but it was basically America and China. You never really got a good look at what the government was doing. It was always sort of shadowy and nefarious. But I have to wonder if that's not the way things are looking right now, with China owning so much of the American debt, that if there's going to be some sort of mega superpower in the next few decades, it's not some sort of Chinese-American alliance. Be that as it may, I'm not so sure the world can be united that well. There's still a lot of money owned by countries who are notoriously not of the same mindset, let's say, as China and America.
Definitely not.
So I have a hard time seeing that the world is united, although it's possible that more mergers, more corporations merging, it's going to be difficult to tell the difference between the government and the corporations that are giving us our stuff. And if there are mergers between countries as well, it could be for an interesting sociological experiment over the next century, one I'm not so sure I want to see.
Definitely. I mean, and like you said, this is one of those things. It's not a if this were to happen tomorrow, it wouldn't pan out at all. In the next 300, 500 years, I could actually see this being a melting pot or one big society instead of just the little bitties that we have now.
It's something we don't get people predicting as often as I might have thought when we started this show, which is the idea of a unified Earth. It's gone out of fashion. It was a really big thing in the middle part of the century, especially after World War II, to think of the United Nations eventually leading to a world government, and it was very non-controversial for the most part. Now it's become this anathema, this sort of idea of tyranny, that one world government can only lead to bad things. So it looks right now like, well, no one would allow that ever to happen. But I think maybe it happens in a way we wouldn't expect. And when you bring up corporations, I've had a lot of conversations with people about Google recently taking on China, acting as a country. So, you know, you think about China and the U.S., Google's having foreign relations of their own with China. Yeah. And granted, they're bringing in the U.S. on their side, but it may be that we end up with a unified world government that is not called a world government, that the idea of governments go by the wayside, and we're unified under some kind of structure that's maybe not even corporate, but a structure that's emerging now, and we won't recognize it.
Yeah, we could all be owned by Taco Bell, and that's just the way it goes. But I mean, that is kind of a serious aspect of it. Is countries will be not, their debt's not going to be owned by a government anymore. It's going to be all corporate driven in the next 500 years. I just can't imagine it not be, because we're such a labor society in anywhere in the world. If you go, no matter where you go, there's always somebody working, if that makes any sense. So there's always got to be, a boss of that person working.
Well, the internet's governed by non-governmental organizations. What if that eventually turned out to expand its authority? And under the manipulation and influence of corporations and stronger governments, ended it up being how, sort of the Trojan horse for world government?
Oh, yeah, it's very possible. I mean, there's so many. Each one of us own an IP address. We each pay, $11 a year to some company we don't even know about. And it's very possible that in the long term, they're going to have and control our information. That's just bottom line. They can do it any time and just move around. So it's very,
Phil,
it's
do you
very
think-
easy.
Phil, do you think we ever get to a one world situation?
No.
Okay.
Just against our human nature, we won't.
As long as there is more than one religion, as long as there is more than one ideology when it comes to government, we'll never be one world. For that matter, because if you just want to look at the religious aspects, and I know this podcast is not supposed to be this serious, but
hey, it comes and goes.
It goes.
As long as there's one religion that says everybody who believes this other religion, we have to kill them. And if these guys don't have the kind of weapons that can wipe all these people out, then there's always going to be heads butting about that. As long as there are people who feel that their government is the best. As long as people feel that their country is the best, I can't imagine Canadians willfully saying, "Yes, we'll be the 51st through 60th states." That's just not going to happen. And there's just too much national pride. There's too much pride of person, and so I suspect that in the future, and again, this is a losing game to try to predict stuff like this, but I think that there will still be a lot of national identity, a lot of self-identity, whether it's religious or country or region or whatever. But there will be sort of a loose umbrella organization. The United Nations, you could think of that as what it is now, although I wouldn't necessarily say that because countries don't necessarily negotiate with each other through the United Nations. But, everybody talks about, where's my jetpack? Where's my flying car? And I keep thinking, I'm really glad people don't have jetpacks and flying cars now that it's the future. But in the past, people used to think that the big revolution would be in energy and that we'd be able to make these little tiny energy packs, Mr. Fusion, and all this stuff would happen. But in fact, the revolution was not with energy. It was with information, and it was with processing speed. And so we're able to make these computers which can process information very quickly, transport it very quickly, and that's become sort of the currency today. You know, I'm a blogger. That's it's a career that didn't exist 10 years ago, kind of, sort of. And you could say 50 years ago we had bloggers, but not really. They were, you know, newspaper writers or whatever. But in fact, the blogger industry is marginalizing the newspapers in a sense. I don't think newspapers are going to go anytime soon, but the industry itself has changed. I think that's what's going to happen. There will be other new industries that come up, things that we don't expect as our technology improves. And that's going to change the way governments have to deal with each other. China has to deal with the rest of the world a lot more than it ever did, because Google says, we want to have our search engine on your computers. Well, now what happens when somebody someplace in China wants to learn what happened at Tiananmen Square? You know, somebody has to control that information. What's the next thing that's going to be controllable like that?
I'm a podcaster. That's a career that still doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's true. You don't think there's any kind of singular event or something that changes a paradigm on that level where we end up in a singularly minded government? Because I mean, it seems like throughout history you have this change happening all the time. So at one point, half the world doesn't even know the other half exists because nobody can travel there. But then they learn how to travel there, and then there's trouble usually. But eventually, things kind of settle out and things kind of get normal. And then you have other conflicts and then they kind of settle out and get normal. Do you think there's ever the possibility even of one event or one single moment that changes the way everyone sees things and at the core changes our humanity, really, because of it? You don't think that's actually possible?
Short of a mile-wide asteroid impact, no. You know, I mean, the Israelis and the Arabs have been fighting for thousands of years. You know, I don't see that changing anytime soon. As the weapons have gotten more advanced, so is the fighting. So, you know, that's just one example. There are thousands of others. And I just don't see us having a world government unless it's something where it's, like I said, the corporations, which just get more and more money. And they just get so much control that they can control that sort of thing. Now, I'm just talking out of my hat. I have no clue what I'm talking about. I'm a blogger. I'm not even wearing pants right now.
Right. None of us are.
Well,
I can't speak for Nick, but I know Scott and I aren't wearing pants right now.
Well, so, yeah, I had to put on my shirt
with a
today.
Giant grain of salt. But I don't see people agreeing enough on that sort of thing to be able to form a world government anytime soon.
I can understand where you're coming from. The only thing that I could say differently is exactly what you just said. I know that made no sense whatsoever. But basically, corporations can shoehorn us into being a one society. And that may be the stretch that you're looking for in that situation.
It may be an Apple type thing, like you're saying, where we're told it's not one society, but it really is.
Yeah.
All right, let's move over to your long-term prediction, Phil. A giant grain of salt, perhaps, or some other thing in the long-term future. What do you see coming?
Well, I was actually thinking about talking about a world government and all that, and I suspect that...
sorry, didn't mean to step on your toes there, sir.
Yeah, that's okay. In the long, long term, you know, the kind of places where I think about that sort of thing, especially ever since I was a kid reading science fiction, is space travel and where we're going to be in the long term, hundreds of years from now. And it's technologically possible to colonize the moon. We already have the technology to do that. We can hoist nuclear generators, put them on the moon. There's plenty of power. There's sunlight falling there 2 weeks at a time on the moon near the equator. And if you put solar panels in near the North Pole, there are places where the sun shines down all the time, 24 hours a day or whatever a day is on the moon. And now that they're finding water in large quantities in these craters, it's hard to say, but it's possible that a colony could be self-sustaining. NASA's looking into this very seriously, where for the first couple of decades, they would need supplies from the earth in terms of food and all that. But eventually, water, air, and all of that could be generated by the base itself. The moon is iron poor. There's not as much iron there as there is on the earth, but it does have iron. There are nickel iron asteroids that pass by close enough that could be used basically in space to create bases and more rockets. And we can just continue to do this and expand exponentially through the solar system. I don't want to say where we'll be in the long, long, long term, but I will say absolutely that if we have the will to do it, we could populate every colonizational place, every colonizationable, that's a good Scrabble word, it's worth the 80s. every place like that in the solar system, and the places that we can't colonize, we'll terraform, we'll make them more Earth-like.
I love this. I'm all for the spreading out and finding new places that will support our life once we've exhausted this one, because this rock won't last forever. What do you think, Nick? Is it is it a good plan to spread our virus like existence out?
Oh yeah, I think it's a very good idea that we continue to multiply the human race and go out forth and create maybe new colonizations in different societies in general. I think it's a good idea to not only colonize the moon, but let's go on into Mars. And I agree that the moon is a stepping stone to Mars. And that's what NASA has been saying for several years, is we need to go back to the moon so that we can get ready to go to Mars.
Aren't we just creating rebel bases that will try to overthrow our alliance by then, though?
Yes! That's good! Yeah. Not to bring Heinlein up again, but Reed Moon is a harsh mistress.
Yes, exactly.
That's a good thing. We get a little revolution now and again, you know?
That's exactly what I knew Tom was going to probably say, but I was thinking the same thing. But
Death Stars.
Aren't we, little devil's advocate here, aren't we every time we try to expand in that way, not that we've tried real hard to get to Mars, but when we do, won't we just be shifting, like you're worried about the next few years when they're going to make you stop barbecuing, as sacrilege in Texas as that may be. So it's then you're going to go to Mars and barbecue for a long time before anybody says anything, but ultimately they're going to say something again, and then people are going to get out of there again. I mean, are we just doing it because we're eating up these resources so fast that it's better that we spread and eat up everyone else's resources so that we can exist as a human race? Or do we ever slow down and go, well, you know, maybe we should figure out how to better use what we have?
Are you contrasting us to locusts, sir? Is that what you're trying to do here?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and yeah, I agree. If we spread ourselves out, we will be consuming the entire, you know, whatever colonizations we have out there. And once we get rid of those resources, you're exactly right. We're going to have to move over to the next one and the next one and the next one. And then, you know, 3,000 years from now, we're nowhere near the same society we were, you know, me out in the backyard barbecuing. So it does take away from humanity. I agree with that.
Well, all right.
I'm not too concerned about polluting the moon, though, to be honest. As a scientific laboratory, I'd like to keep the moon as pristine as possible. On the other hand, it's a big, giant rock in space. And so there are people who are like, you know, don't go polluting the moon, man. And I'm thinking, it's a rock. It doesn't even have any air.
The moon could sort of be defined as pollution itself.
Technically, yeah.
It's just a space rock floating out there. Nobody asked for it to be here. It's just kind of doing its thing.
Just a big piece of iron poor gunpowder smelling space trash.
Yeah, but the good thing is it catches all the asteroids that come to the Earth. So, I mean, you know, it's a
protection racket.
It's a good reason there.
if we go to Mars and we find primitive life, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But we're pretty sure the moon is a fairly barren rock, so I'm not too concerned about that. And you know, it's at some level, if I have to choose between humans and bacteria, I'll choose humans. Now, I'm not saying I think we should just go to Mars and pour bleach all over everything and kill it, because I don't want to lose the scientific and the aesthetic.
Plus, it's so expensive to carry all the bleach you'd need.
It's true. Although, again, one giant asteroid impact and your job's done for you.
That's true.
Easy peasy. So I don't just think we should spread like bacteria, to mix a metaphor there. We should be careful. You know, when we go to any new place, we should be as careful as we can not to screw things up. But at some point, I think that spreading to other places is a good idea. We don't understand the Earth well enough to keep all of our eggs in this one basket. Moving to another planet, I think, is a really, really good idea, because I'd like to make sure that humanity, or whatever it will become, you know, will become in the next 1,000 years, has some chance for prosperity in this universe millennia from now.
And then finally, the mole men can inherit the Earth.
That's right.
I think, actually. But mole men are good, too.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the crazy-ass predictions. One really far-out-there forecast, like in 2,000 years, we'll all be made of bread or whatever. Time frame doesn't matter. Just take the leap, and Phil, we'll stick with you. What's your crazy-ass prediction?
Nothing will change.
That seems to be a theme with you.
I know. And you know why? It's because when I look back 2,000 years, when I look back 50 years, I see people. I see people arguing over the same dumb stuff. Now, there are different things going on now where we're elevating dumbosity to the level of putting it on a pedestal now, where people get their own TV shows and even get elected to high office who don't understand the very Constitution they're sworn to defend. But, you know, when you look back at 2,000 years ago, the arguments are over the same thing. It's over land, it's over food, it's over people, it's over what I believe versus what you believe. We're just getting better at fighting these sorts of things. I don't think we're necessarily any smarter about it. So we might very well be colonizing other planets. We might be doing other things. But I suspect that when it comes down to it, it's not going to be the squeaky clean Enterprise D that we saw on Next Generation. It's going to be more of a Firefly thing, where there's still going to be fist fights and there's still going to be people arguing over this, that, and the other thing. There's still going to be jealousy. It'll just be on a much more sophisticated level.
That's crazy.
Plus, this gets me out of having to think of a real prediction. So, people will still be lazy and do things at the last second. That's my prediction.
These kind of predictions, we get them occasionally, and sometimes they ring true to me, and sometimes and they always sort of serve to depress me a little bit about the future of humanity. And I always come back to this thing where it seems like our basic humanity does not allow for us to see the truth of what others see the truth as. In other words, your definition of dumb, for example, might be somebody else's definition of reality. And they don't think it's so dumb until I'm not saying that you're wrong or they're wrong. I'm saying until we can figure out a way to come up with what is absolute dumb or what is absolute not dumb.
The Platonic ideal of dumb.
Yeah. Like we have no way I don't even have a good word for it, but there's no way to, it's all, since there's no real such thing as absolutes to most people, or in other words, their absolute is different than my absolute. I don't know when we get there. So I hate to say this, but I kind of think your prediction is mostly true until we can figure out a way to say, nope, this is, you know, what we're both saying is wrong because here's the thing that is totally right. And well, until someone can do that, I don't know. I don't know how we get out of this rut.
You're right, except that you're right up to the point where the last thing you said, I think, because we already know a lot of things that are absolutely true, and yet people still deny it. You know, the Earth is round. It's 4.5 billion years old. There are a lot of things that we absolutely know that there's still a huge segment of the population totally denies that. They're just, that's all they do. So yeah, until we can figure out a way of actually communicating that information to other people, I think you're right.
Well, there are a few things we have gotten better at over the years, multiplying and living longer.
And not multiplying,
true
for that matter.
Well, that's true. Actually, we've gotten pretty good at that in the developed world. The developing world's starting to catch up with us.
So you know what it's going to be 1,000, 2,000 years ago? It's going to be your 14th dimensional easement is overlapping my 15th dimensional portico. We're going to go into brain battle like that. That's what's going to be. That's my prediction.
The brains of Abrasion belong to the Empire of the Founders, or something like that. All right, let's move over to you, Nick. Your crazy-ass prediction, when you look into the far, bread-filled people future, what do you see?
The thing I see the most... Wow, it just pixelated. The thing I see the most is we're science-driven society. We're always looking for that next discovery. And I think that we're going to drive ourselves to the point of extinction. It's just going to be some catastrophic event. You know, the CHC actually creates dark matter and we all get sucked into it. It's going to be something.
You mean a black hole?
Something so stupid. Yeah, that's you know, we're just wanting to get that one last experiment done, that it's actually going to destroy humanity in general.
So not to the point of extinction. You think we're just going to extinguish ourselves?
I think it's going to be gone. Yeah, there'll be nothing left. And
so what actual, do you have a prediction on what the experiment will be, just off the top of your head? Like what thing will we be doing that'll blow us all to kingdom come?
I think that we're gonna start really looking into more feasible electrical type, you know, almost in the Tesla coil, but a little bit different, probably LHC. Sorry, the chat room actually corrected me, and I thank you for that, because
CHC
is completely different. Yeah, LHC. But I think that we're going to get to the point where we're trying something in a large scale. In other words, we're going to try to power something over long term, and that's just going to, something's going to go catastrophically wrong and wipe out the entire Earth.
So we're going to blow ourselves up.
Yeah, we never do anything small. I mean,
Cheery.
If you think about it, we never do experiments small, but it's going to be it's just going to be one huge catastrophic failure.
So we have two sides of the coin here. Phil says, nothing's going to change. And Nick says, everything's going to be dead.
We're all going to die. Catastrophic, you know, black hole passing through the Earth. I'm saying that.
Yeah.
But, you know, what he said is actually interesting, because in my opinion, I think that when we take on these really big projects like the Large Hadron Collider, there are a lot of really smart people who really look into this a lot, and they make sure that nothing wrong can happen, or at least to the best of our ability. And it makes me wonder if the real problem is going to be not something small. I agree with Nick on that. But for example, the introduction of antibiotics seemed like it was going to cure, except for viruses, but it was going to cure all of our bacterial ills, literally. And look what happened. What we wound up creating was a mini version of natural selection, such that the superbugs could survive these drugs, get the drug-resistant bacteria, and you might wind up making things worse. And so it may be something like that, something completely out of left field. It's not going to be the giant energy-generating machine necessarily. It might be something where we think we're doing something good, but you know, that's where it happens, something medical. There's so many people on this planet, and transportation is so fast now that you can spread diseases and things like that. And that's what I worry about, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, it's we have microcosmic sort of examples of this with war all the time. If you look at certain wars, they seem to make, and I'm talking like throughout all history, not recent stuff so much, but look at any war and think, wow, there was some, on this side, there seemed like there was some real intent to do good with this decision to annex this off, or this decision to pull out of this city, or this decision to invade this city. And in almost every single case, there's weird repercussions, stuff that lasts thousands of years because of this one little move somebody did. And I think that there's merit in the idea that sometimes we do things that we think are good now that can come back to bite us in the butt. And maybe it's solar energy. We're all going to get solar one day, but then somebody 50 years from now is going to find out that every form of cancer is now solar related, or some weird thing like that will happen.
I the law of unintended consequences is one I like to be very wary, or be very aware of, rather. I guess wary of it as well. When we try to control things, when we try to say, well, we're going to have to put digital rights management on this because we have to stop the pirates from stealing our stuff, it has huge unintended consequences. And so the idea that we can know with certainty what's going to happen around anything is ridiculous. However, you can get paralyzed by that and start to say, well, we need to put in laws that make sure nothing bad ever happens, in which case no one is ever allowed to leave their house because there's always going to be a chance. So it's a matter of finding that balance between, okay, we need to explore, we need to learn, and we need to see what's going on. How do we keep aware of that law of unintended consequences and try to minimize it as much as possible?
Yep, somebody in the chat room is talking about how zombies are, there probably won't be a zombie uprising, but the idea is very real that we could have some sort of virus-related epidemic that could essentially create zombies out of all of us, simply because somebody at some point said it'd be a good idea to put this new experimental drug into the market, and that drug had some crazy reaction, and before you know it, everyone's The Walking Dead.
That was a Will Smith movie, I believe.
Yep.
Basically, I Am Legend.
Yes.
And it was a corporation that gave it to us all. So, I mean, look at that.
And the Omega Man before that, and the last man on Earth.
Read the first chapter of Richard Preston's The Hot Zone, about a guy who had Marburg and got on a plane, could have spread it. It's pretty scary, and that was real. So.
Yeah. We're always a little more resilient as a species than we like to think sometimes, though. It's kind of amazing we haven't eliminated our entire human race already, considering what we're capable of.
We had this technology for a little amount of time. You know, we've only had airplanes that can travel across the planet for a few decades.
So you're saying it's not too late.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Saying this whole time. You know, barring some sort of unpredictable catastrophe, which seems more and more likely all the time, you know, I don't think a whole lot's going to change, but we have to make sure that happens. You know, we can prevent asteroid impacts. We can prevent solar flares from wiping out our electric grid if we choose to do that. But there are a lot of things we can't prevent. As far as astronomy goes, not that many. We can either prevent them or we can't. So we should prevent what we can. But other things, medical disasters, other technological disasters, things like that, I think you're right. We need to be very mindful of the consequences of what we do. The problem is the law of unintended consequences is unintended.
Yeah, right.
It's a decent adjective. I think that's an adjective.
Somebody in the chat room, Tonda Gosa, just made the point that we are the virus that wouldn't go away. If you want to think about it in that way, we are this super resilient form of life that the Earth just can't shake off of itself. And it's a weird way to look at it, but it's kind of, you know, there's some parallels there.
There's a George Carlin saying somewhere in there, too. Not really.
Terrible. Sure.
Yeah, right.
Shake us off like fleas. No.
All right, time for four questions. This is the segment of the show where each of our guests are faced by four rapid-fire questions about the future. We ask you not to stop and think, just answer from the gut. It's free association time, and Scott, you can start us off.
All right, Nick McKinney, are you sitting comfortably in your barbecue-laden chair in Texas?
I am fine in my interrogation chair. Let's go.
All right, here we go. The tables have turned. What animal has the power to evolve into a dominant creature and enslave humanity, in your opinion?
Cockroaches.
Okay. Yuck.
They're resilient. You can't get rid of them. You have to, you know, they're just going to finally get up to the point where they're so bigger than us. So
yep. You have to buy motels for them. They're so bad. If time travel were possible and you were to jump into a prehistoric jungle, what time of day would you jump there?
Well, I would want to be able to see what I'm, you know, going to be eaten by. So I'm going to have to say during the daytime, you know, noon or so.
More barbecue. When our robot overlords round us up, what will they nickname you?
Not the brains, that's for sure. They'll probably nickname me the barbecuer.
All right, fair enough.
The execution person.
As long as it's not the barbecued, you're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
We're staying on topic. I like it. Finally, the cheese of the future, creamy, sharp, or runny?
You know what? It's actually going to be runny because it'll be in a tube. So
very nice. Very nice.
Ah, tube cheese. Lovely.
Yum, yum.
Good times.
That sounds dirty.
Yeah, and it probably is. The law of unintended consequences strikes again. Phil Plait, are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one.
Okay.
In the year 2075, who will win the World Series of robot soccer?
The 1001-1000s.
I hate those guys. They always win.
I know. It's terrible.
It's like
they either win or lose. It's binary.
They just buy their victories. Question number two. When the mole men at the center of the world finally reveal themselves, what will be their message?
They'll say, send air conditioning.
it's freaking magma, man.
Yes.
It's hot.
Hot in the core.
You try living here. Question number three. How many more body part-shaped objects will astronomy discover in the next 10 years?
An infinite number, I certainly hope, because I want to keep doing Woodstock as long as I can. And that's what I talk about at Woodstock, astronomical body parts.
It was one of my favorite parts of Woodstock San Diego. Thank you for that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you said you were there.
Question number four. Which planet-destroying astronomical event will turn out to be the most fun and well-attended?
Oh, well, well attended. Well, a gamma ray burst would certainly wipe out everybody on the planet, so that would be well attended by definition, 100% of the population fried. But I don't know if that would be the most fun. Alien invasion might be the most fun, depending on what the aliens look like and how exactly they're going to enslave us.
How does an alien invasion count as an astronomical event?
Well, they're coming from someplace out in space.
Yeah, right. They're objects from space, just because they happen to be living. Shouldn't hold that against them.
I mean, if you're talking about natural astronomical events, I'm not sure. I'd have to
I did not specify, so that's...
But I think, you know, if they evolve naturally, then they count.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for opening my mind to aliens as astronomical objects.
I'm here to teach.
And thank you both for being on Forecast. This has been fabulous. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Nick McKinney.
Thanks, Tom. It's been great.
I predict the show is over.
It's pretty darn close. Nick McKinney, host of 20 Questions. I should give you an extra thanks for filling in at the last minute. We had a guest cancel on it this morning, and you were very kind to step into the gap. Thank you, sir.
Hey, that's what I'm here for.
Let people know where they can find your stuff on the internet.
You can find me at 20 Questions, blogcreations.com/20Questions. The Q is actually lowercase. Thank you, GoDaddy.com. And then you can actually find me on Twitter at NMcKinney28. And that's NMCKINN28. Or EY, sorry, 28. Sorry.
And Phil Plait, a.k.a. The Bad Astronomer. Let folks know where they can find you. Anywhere, the internet, the television, even.
Yeah, I exist only as electrons floating around the internet. You can find me on Discover Magazine's website. If you go to badastronomy.com, that'll redirect you right to my blog, where I pontificate on matters astronomical, political, animal, and vegetable. I guess I'm on Twitter too as Bad Astronomer, and mostly I just link to my blog and make really stupid puns, and hopefully. Bad Universe will become a series on Discovery Channel. The third episode is not yet aired. Hoping it'll air pretty soon. I'll certainly be announcing that when it happens.
Everybody think good thoughts. I don't know. I don't know if it'll help, but it can't hurt about Bad Universe, because I would love to see that turned into a series too. A big fan.
Email Discovery Channel.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Email the Discovery Channel.
Thanks for being on the show, Phil. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
All right, Scott. That concludes another Forecast.
It does. I feel bad that I actually, people really may not notice this, but I missed chunks because of my stupid internet. So I have a short-term prediction that I'm going to go kick somebody's butt at my DSL office. But I had a wonderful time.
Is that a prediction or a threat?
It's more of a threat, I guess, than a prediction. But I do want to say this before we leave. You always say, so Scott, any business we need to take care of? And by gum, Tom, I have some business to take care of.
All right.
The business is, I just want to recommend people check out a podcast that I do on the Frog Pants Network called Film Sack. If you haven't been watching it, you're missing out. If you like old crummy movies, we cover them all. And I'm excited because this coming week, we did a commentary track that you're supposed to watch the movie right along with for the film Batman, the 1966 version. It is hilarious and I highly recommend it. So there's my plug for the week. And it's always a pleasure to be here with you, Tom, and our guests.
Thank you very much, sir. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or you can send us an email, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Until next week, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
But it's only 32 years away.